Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. More at alyeskapipeline.com.
Coming up on Hometown Alaska, host Dave Waldron gets down with geeky goodness and all things Arctic Comic Con. He sits down with co-founder of the local convention to discuss the celebrity guests, the events, and more. And later in the show, Dave meets two homegrown game designers who are making a name for themselves with their Alaska-influenced releases and will be there at the convention. And on State of Art, join me, Ammon Swenson, for a conversation with Anchorage's Brother Buffalo. The Yak rap duo recently performed alongside local classical musicians for the hip-hop orchestra experience. We discuss combining classical music with rap, an upcoming coffee collaboration, and keeping Indigenous culture alive in new ways. That's all coming up next on Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media.
Consider a gift of stock to Alaska Public Media. You may avoid paying capital gains tax and receive a deduction. Learn more at alaskapublic.org/stock or contact your financial advisor.
Hello and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and today we're giving you a sneak peek of one of the biggest comic book and gaming celebrations you can find in the state of Alaska, the annual Arctic Comic Con, which will be happening this weekend at the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage. And with me to talk about what the convention will be featuring this year is Mike LaJoy. He's a co-founder of Arctic Comic Con, which started back up in 2018. Mike, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a lot of fun. Thank you. So for our listeners that are aware of the original comic convention that takes place in San Diego there every year, the phrase Comic Con can mean a lot more than just comics, right? You've roped in video games, we've got anime, cosplay, anything else you can classify as like geek culture. Am I missing anything with Arctic Comic Con there?
No, I mean, we celebrate all of those things. Collectible card games like Pokemon and Magic the Gathering. You mentioned cosplay. It's just a celebration of pop culture in general. Comic-Con did originate in San Diego, started in somebody's garage, I think, and elevated to the level that it is now. It's the largest convention in the entire world. I myself have been to San Diego one time, and it's fully immersive.
Yeah. What year was that?
1996.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I've been doing this for a little bit. I moved here to Anchorage in 1991 and did some really small comic book conventions at the Anchorage Hilton when I first moved up here, maybe 2 or 3 years in, brought up some creators. And at the time, that's really all you had was writers and artists to bring up. So that's how the idea got started with myself. Brad and I started working together on a radio program. We had a morning show here. And Brad had the idea to give it a shot. He says, do you think we could do a Comic-Con here? And I said, absolutely. The ones I did were successful until we got hit with 2 feet of snow 1 weekend, and then that was it, right? And I had no budget. I was underfunded. It was just a dream. This is a passion project for me. I've been a collector of comic books and a fan of the art medium in general since I was about 6 years old, so...
Do you remember the first comic that got you super into comics?
I do. It was X-Men. And I don't remember the issue number off the top of my head. I want to say it's in the 160s. It was written by Chris Claremont, who's a prolific X-Men writer, years and years. John Byrne did the art, and they had such a thing going. I was immersed. I got into that book, and I realized this is what I want to do. I want to start collecting comics. So that's what I did. That's the book that hooked me.
Well, so how do you gauge the temperature for something like that? Like, can Alaska withstand that kind of... convention.
I'm not going to lie. The first time, the first year we agreed to do it, I said, Brad, we can do this con. I want you to go to one with me. Brad's a concerts and events guy,
okay.
But he'd never been to an actual Comic-Con. We started to see this on the Sci-Fi Network when they broadcast live from San Diego, things like that. And it generated a lot of interest, and Brad became interested in it. I said, well, yeah, we could do it. You got to go to one with me. So we hopped on a jet, and we went to Portland and went to Rose City Comic-Con. And it took Brad all of maybe a half hour to go, wow, I get it. And it's there's such great family fun events. There's so much positivity. It's inclusive. Comic-Cons are just so much fun. And so then we decided to do it. And, you know, I borrowed some money from my retirement. And Brad did the same to, you know, take care of deposits and things like that on the Denina Center and travel deposits and artist deposits. And we put it together. And the first year was terrifying, absolutely terrifying.
And that was 2018?
That was 2018. Okay, yeah. And, you know, it's, Alaska tends to be a bit of a last second crowd for a lot of things, especially new things. So sure. Going into about 2 or 3 weeks before the event, I'm like, wow. I've made a terrible mistake.
Is anyone going to come?
But people showed up and showed out, and the event has grown every single year since then.
Yeah, and it seemed like you had a really good 2019 as well, just based on the lineup and everything. But then 2020 happened, COVID. So what did that do to your trajectory you were starting to build there?
Well, yeah, that's, I mean, you know, it was a bit of a momentum killer. We had a lineup set for 2020, and at the last minute, of course, like the rest of the world, we had to go full pause. Mm-hmm. And we rebooked the con 4 times trying to get through COVID. So it was supposed to happen in April of 2020. We moved it to October. We're like, well, we'll take an October date. We'll see if we can do it then. October came, of course.
Yeah.
It didn't happen. So there were 4 times we rebooked the convention trying to make it happen during COVID. So a lot of the talent that was originally booked in 2020 hung on and still showed up in 2022.
Oh, that's great. Well, thankfully, conventions are back in full force, fully attended. Let's talk about your lineup this year.
Sure.
Who are you bringing up?
So, man, there's so many people. Patrick Warburton is coming from, of course, Seinfeld. He was in this Fox series, The Tick. It only lasted 1 season, but that's some of the funniest television I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. If you haven't watched it, you can catch it online, I'm sure, streaming somewhere. Faye Mata is coming as well. She's an actress, a voice actress. Number of video games, League of Legends, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Sailor Moon. She's done animes. Jason Mewes, of course, Jay and Silent Bob. he's going to be here. We've got actors from other animes as well. Kira Buckland, who's actually a local, originally from Alaska.
Right.
She's coming back, and she's done a ton of anime voice work. Mike McFarland, another great anime voice actor. Sam Jones, Flash Gordon, is going to be here.
Oh, yes,
and
yes,
Sam,
of course.
Sam, we don't usually bring guests back, and Sam came in 2018 and contacted us. It was one of the craziest things. He just, he had a cancellation, and he heard about the con in Alaska. He says, I'll come up and do the appearance. The Kids in the Hall are going to be here.
Oh, yes.
And I love The Kids in the Hall.
Me too, yeah.
I'm super excited about that show. Patrick Warburton is going to do 2 shows at Coots Thursday night, the 24th. The Kids in the Hall will be performing Saturday night, the 26th. So that's in addition to comic book artists. Lobos is going to be here. Amazing cover artist. Tyler Kirkham, another great comic artist, has worked on all of the major characters. Deadpool, Venom, they all have. And Mustafa Musa, great artist as well. So there's something for everybody, absolutely. It's going to be an amazing, immersive event right here in Alaska that we're so happy to bring to you.
You got some heavy hitters there for sure. Well, I want to play a clip from one of the guest speakers, Patrick Warburton, who you mentioned there, from a lot of animated programs.
Joe Swanson. I didn't even mention American Dad, did I?
American Dad, yeah. Kronk from The Emperor's New Groove, and my personal favorite, Brock Sampson from the Venture Brothers cartoon. But the clip I'm going to play is from the Netflix series, A Series of Unfortunate Events, who he actually plays as himself, not animated, and he plays a Lemony Snicket there.
If you were interested in stories with happy endings, then you would be better off somewhere else. In the story, not only is there no happy ending, there is no happy beginning, and very few happy things in the middle. My name is Lemony Snicket. It is my solemn duty to bring to light the sorry history of the Baudelaire children as it happened so many years ago. But you in the audience have no such obligation, and I would advise all our viewers to turn away immediately and watch something more pleasant instead.
Just wanted to play that clip because, you know, you hear his name and a lot of people might not know his name, but he's got that voice that you have definitely heard in
absolutely.
Show somewhere.
And multi-generational. I mean, the older demographic, of course, most excited about his appearances on Seinfeld. The Tick was several years after that. But the kids that are out there are going to recognize his name from Skylanders. He voiced a character for Skylanders, the video game,
Oh, nice.
As well. And it was the narrator of the entire game. So he's done a lot of work, and everybody recognizes that voice.
For sure. Well, I imagine it's pretty hard to promote an event where people know the guest's voice really well, but they don't know their name or even their face. So what's that like for you? How challenging is that to promote these people that you're like, I promise you know who these people are?
Yeah, it's thank God for IMDb, right? I mean, because I grew up in, you see a movie and you have to figure out who was in it and what they've done before. You had to do that all on your own. And now you can just go to IMDb, Google that name, and then you can see everything that they've done. But yeah, it is a challenge sometimes to promote, especially the voice actors, because they're not physically in front of you most of the time, but they're so talented and so gifted. They can do so many different things with their voice. They're the top-notch actors for a reason.
And really is an underappreciated, talented, compared to, you know, a classic actor as well, voice acting. You don't have your body to
right.
project anything. You're just going off your voice. Well, it seems like one of the main draws of these conventions is creating a place to not only celebrate this culture we're talking about, right, by bringing these big names up, but just offering a spot that's inclusive where people can gather and really wear their passions on their sleeve, right?
That's my favorite part of the event, I'll be honest. The fact that everybody is welcome, the fact that everybody can come and just express themselves as who they are, you know, as long as it stays family friendly, we're 100% behind your expression.
Right.
You know, I've seen so many amazing things at cons, fundraisers, and just the passion of the fans themselves and how excited they are to be a part of this event is one of the things that makes me most proud to have brought this to Alaska. I can tell you in 2019, when we had Dean Cain, Dean left the convention in the middle of the day from signing autographs to go outside to autograph the bus of one of the congoers who was, you know, in a wheelchair. And he went out to the bus and autographed his bus in the middle of the day. And I saw a Facebook post from his sister that said he was having one of the best days of his life. And I ugly, happy cry, 100%. But it really was one of the most gratifying things I've ever seen. And I'm so glad that we could make that connection.
Yeah. What has the response been from the people you bring up when they come to Alaska? I know there's so many misconceptions about Alaska and the people that live here. What do people tend to tell you?
I mean, we Brad and I focus really hard on making everybody feel like their family when they get here. And I've been to lots of other cons and I've seen how they operate. And we really try to personalize the experience for them too, so that when they come, they feel like they're part of our Alaskan family. And the response has been overwhelming. I mean, we get requests to come back from the artists, from the writers, from the actors, from the actresses, everybody involved. They really do love coming to Alaska. And Alaska gives us the ability, because it's on so many people's bucket list if they haven't been here, to bring some talent up that we would not normally be able to get. And I think Patrick Warburton's a pretty good example of that. Sam Jones had never been to Alaska before. And we got those guys because we're in Alaska. If we were in Des Moines, probably wouldn't be happening. But they're happy to be here for sure.
Take that, Des Moines.
I drove through there once. I won't go back.
Well, Arctic Comic Con is more than just guest speakers, though, right? So we should talk about that as well. What are some of the other things that the convention offers, like vendors or like workshops, community building?
There's a huge, huge vendor floor. All sorts of vendors, artists, writers, crafters, you know, people who create cosplays. There's, you know, people who are into stuffies. There's stuffies. There's gaming. My God, every year I see a new vendor and I'm like, wow, I wish I'd have thought of that. So there is something for everybody. We're going to have taiko drummers are going to be performing in our anime room. And we'll also be promoting the Japanese immersion program for Anchorage School District. We'll be there and doing some outreach as well. So there's a lot of community aspects. We've got an entire row of nonprofits that will be represented there as well.
Well, you mentioned the cosplay, and I know that's a big part of these comic conventions. What are some of the craziest or coolest outfits that you've seen where people are dressing up as their favorite characters from video games or comic books?
Yeah, I get to host the cosplay cup. We call it the cosplay cup. And every year we award first, second, and third place the best blacksmithing or armor creating and sewing. And the local cosplayers really do an amazing job of putting their cosplays together. Video games, animes, Some of them are, you know, just from TV series or movies, and then of course comics as well. So the community really does come out, and they do an amazing job of promoting their fandom.
Yeah, and how much time do you think goes into a costume like that? I mean, making armor is no joke.
Some of those costumes, they work all year. They know at the end of the con what they're going to dress as the next year, and they start working on them immediately. A lot of those costumes that they put together, they've worked 6 months on, or maybe a year, maybe even more. The cosplayers, the serious professional level cosplayers, put in an inordinate amount of work into their craft, and it's really, really impressive.
I agree. Well, I want to play one more clip from one of your guests coming up. You mentioned the kids in the hall. Right before the interview, me and my producer, Ammon Swenson, there, we were talking about how we grew up with them and how much we enjoyed them. So in case you forgot what Kids in the Hall was, it's an improv, Canadian-based sketch comedy group, and we're just going to play a little clip there.
Excuse me.
Yeah?
Do you have the new Depeche Mode record?
Yeah, it's over there, but it sucks.
Do you have the latest Pixies album?
Yeah, but it sucks. All that new stuff sucks, but it's over there.
You know, actually, I was thinking of getting into something vintage anyway. I don't know, maybe the Doors?
Really? Never had you figured for a Doors fan.
I'm not really a Doors fan, but sure, I'd like to get into them.
No, my friend. Doors fans aren't made. They're born.
Love that clip there. And I think we've all been to a record store like that at some point. Like,
absolutely. I mean, they all of them, I'm Crushing Your Head, the whole, I mean, there's so many great things that they did that they infused themselves into our culture. And you grew up with them. And well, I think I was in college at the time and just amazed at how creative they were. And we're very lucky to have gotten them to come this year.
Do you have a favorite that you've brought up in the past? Was
wow.
It too hard?
It really is too hard. You mean my favorite guest?
Yeah.
Jeez, that's so tough. You know, John Schneider from Dukes of Hazzard, he played Dad on Smallville. Mm-hmm. So many great roles. What a great guy. And, you know, growing up, I idolized Bo Duke. And so that was a huge moment for me. Michael Biehn was great a few years ago, of course, from Tombstone and Aliens. Amazing actor, very, very nice. He brought his entire family with him.
Nice.
So when things like that happen, it really helps. And I like the professional wrestlers. I'm a nerd. So, you know, all of the professional wrestlers, we brought up the Hurricane, Vicky Guerrero, Chavo Guerrero. We brought up Victoria. They've all been fantastic to work with. Everybody, honestly, has been amazing.
I didn't realize wrestling had made its way into like the holy trinity of nerddom.
100%. Yeah. I mean, they're publishing wrestling comics now.
Oh, nice.
All the time.
Yeah.
So the wrestling thing, and we had our local guys do a show last year, too, in the Denina Center. We don't have room for that this year, but it'll be back next year, I'm sure.
All right, there you go, Alaska. Comics, video games, anime, and wrestling.
Anime, wrestling, absolutely. Online gaming, if you're into online gaming, tabletop gaming, pinball machines. There's a food truck carnival. If you're a person who eats food, it'll be available at the Comic-Con. If you breathe air, we'll also have that available in the Denina Center.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a lot to pick from for my last question for you. But what's the most rewarding thing that's come from you taking this risk and starting this convention?
I mean, easily it's watching families get together and come to the event and have a great time. I love seeing them patronize the vendors, enjoying meeting celebrities that they might not have gotten to meet if we hadn't brought them up, and supporting the art in its form, the artists and writers, engaging the community in that way. It's extremely, extremely rewarding.
So we know the convention's happening this weekend, but what are some ways that people can stay up to date?
Oh, all you got to do is visit arcticcomiccon.com. And there's a complete listing of all the guest celebrities, the guest artists, all of the vendors in detail, where they'll be, what's happening, all the panels, the panel schedules will be there. The Cosplay Cup takes place Saturday. There's a family cosplay walk-on on Sunday. All of the information is right there at arcticcomiccon.com. You can buy your badges and get all the information.
Perfect. Thank you. Well, I want to thank my guest, Mike LaJoy. He's the co-founder of Arctic Comic Con, now going 7 years strong. Thanks for coming in, Mike. It was
really
fun.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Up next, we'll be talking with a pair of Alaskans that are making video games, and they'll be at that Arctic Comic Con. I'm Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
Alaska Public Media is now partnering with an Alaskan auction service so a helpful local team can get the biggest return for the least hassle should you decide to donate your vehicle. Learn more at alaskapublic.org/vehicle.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and today we're giving you a preview of what's to come at Arctic Comic Con, which is the comic book, video game, anime, and wrestling convention happening this weekend at the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage. And with me now in the studio are a pair of Alaskan video game developers who will be running a booth there at the convention. Wyatt White and George Young are the creators behind their company, Cake Neck Games. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
It's
a pleasure.
I'm thrilled to have you. So we need to address the biggest issue first. I understand there's a technically proper way to pronounce your company, and then there's the easier way, which I just did, Cake Neck.
Yes.
How do you say each way?
So from home, the way that we say it is Chuknuk, and what that's a part of is Koyana Chuknuk, which is thank you very much. And so this is just very much our games. This is our what we want to give out to the world, and just something that we very much relate to. And that's what we try to do with the games is do things that mean something to us and try to imbue that into the story and everything into the game.
Going hard on it. Going powerfully.
So you're thanking your gamers in advance for playing your games.
Yeah, kind of.
Chuknuk or Cake Neck, either is okay.
Cake Neck is the, legally distinct. When we started the group, we didn't want to, take a Yubik word and make that now our word that we can legally copyright, so we changed enough so that it's inspired by but not the actual, full word.
Got
if that
it.
Makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you're both raised in Bethel, yeah?
Yep.
How did you two find each other, and how quickly did you figure out that you're both gamers?
Fifth grade? Sixth, fourth grade? I don't even know.
I want to say, sixth grade, fifth grade, around that general time is when... Actually, Wyatt moved in a little bit before then.
Yeah, I was not born in Bethel. I was born in the Pacific Northwest in a very small city near Seattle. Mm-hmm. But my parents moved me up there when I was, 7 or 8. I don't actually know. Young.
Yeah.
Young enough that, that's where I grew up and where I know.
Yeah. Seattle to Bethel, that's a big change, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure it was. Not that I don't remember it, just that, I was young enough and it was a big enough change, I think, that, everything before is kind of I vaguely remember first or second grade doing some stuff. But then my mom's a nurse. How many people end up in Bethel is nursing or school. Moved up there, and they're still living there.
Still there now. That's great. Yeah. Well, I think nearly every kid that loves video games growing up has this epiphany that they're going to play or make or test video games as a job when they get older, right? But it almost never happens for most of us. So when did those first steps start to happen for you both?
Oh, man, I think for me, I should probably have a good answer on this by now. But I don't think I've been asked this really before, not in a direct way. Mm-hmm. I started making games in 2011 or 12 with a game called Kniggets, the Monty Python joke.
Yeah, right. The knights.
Yeah.
They pronounce knights Kniggets.
Yeah. I thought it was really funny as a kid. And just a small little, two little dudes who jump up and down and throw little swords at each other. And one of them can throw fireballs and the other one can jump really fast and run really fast. And had a couple people from our LAN party that we both attended at the time draw up some backgrounds and stuff so we could have some cool art behind the actual levels. And that's how I started with that. I put that out after 3 months and nobody played it, and for good reason. It's not good. Bad. I think it's still out there somewhere, probably still on that IndieDB page.
Oh yeah, it is. Check on it every few months just to go look at it, just reminisce.
Yeah, that's it's bad. Thankfully it's under a different name and under a different thing from what we do now. So
it sounds like fun. Are the knights allowed, do they taunt each other during the battle at all, or is the taunting implied?
The taunting is implied. There's a button that makes their heads kind of bobble up and down, because I was going to record a a trailer kind of thing where they would talk to each other and taunt each other and be like, "Aha!" And I was going
to
do a funny French accent for some reason
accent. Yeah. Well, George, were you involved in Kniggets, or was this a Wyatt solo project?
I was involved a bit.
Yeah.
After he had initially coded it and made it and showcased it to the LAN party, and he did the "Hey, let's see what you guys can make for backgrounds and platforms mm-hmm. for us to play against on and things like that. I think I recommended the shield.
Mm-hmm. You recommended the shield where you could, like, put up a little bubble basically yeah. around the player. And then you also, I think, immediately found, oh, if you run into somebody, you can just poke through their shield.
Yeah.
So, like...
And I think that's where my career of being Wyatt's bug tester
yes.
and game tester in general started a lot more of, and where I took place in making games with them a lot more.
Yeah. George is honestly one of the best playtesters in the world. Every single game... Every prototype I, like, put together, I'll, like, do a bunch of work before and be like, okay, this is going to be great. Like, you can't break this. And he just immediately, like, snaps it over his knee. And that's it. I'm like, oh, okay. If you walk away when they start talking to you, actually, you can go through the whole level and they'll still just be talking to you for no reason.
And you don't get attacked.
Like, you don't
it's
get
great.
Attacked ever again because all the enemies are set to ignore you. When,
found,
you know,
yes, like yeah. the golden ticket to beating your game.
If you turn around and jump, you know, you just immediately pop through this thing and you're good to go. You can keep going forever. It's great, but it's also, it can be infuriating. I think I can say that. It can be infuriating.
Oh, yeah. Oh, but, I can hear it in his voice.
In when, service
oh,
of
you
a,
found another thing.
Yes, 100%. But in service of, you know, making the game better and making things more good.
I man's got to do what a man's got to do.
More good.
That's true.
Well, yeah, being a video game tester probably is fun, but at the same time, it's, you know, you're not just there to play games. You're literally looking for problems, right?
Oh, yeah.
You're finding a way to break the game or... beat the game by moving through a wall
oh,
by
yeah.
accident.
I just okay. run into every wall
okay. so
constantly.
That's video game tester
it's ridiculous
job.
Just how long it takes for me to get through a single level. I just want to find every wall, every bug,
so
every
kid,
little skip.
The kids dreaming of being a video game tester, oh. that those dreams have come to a prompt end probably.
I would song. Hope so. It's also worth noting that you're playing like the worst possible version. Like that game will only be better in the future. Like, it's not good yet. You're playing it when it's the worst it will ever be.
And, right. Good point.
And you're not like, oh, let's do this. It'll be fun to, like, shoot all these bad guys and, like, learn a story and, like, build a house or whatever. It's like, what if I put 300 pieces of wood in my pocket and then I tried to jump off this bridge? Would that do anything? Like, would that break something? It's bad and boring and why a lot of us... don't like to do it, but George is very good at it, which is fantastic, you know.
It gets towards the end of the game's development where I've kind of just played myself out on the demos mm-hmm. and I was like, I kind of know exactly how it's supposed to go. I kind of know how I'm not supposed to play it, and I know I'm just going to play it like that.
Right.
So. Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about the games you've made so far, other than Kniggets, of course.
Of course.
I played a few of them this morning. Thank
oh,
you
no.
for making it my job to play
yeah.
video games in the morning.
Congrats and or I'm sorry, kind of whichever applies.
I did enjoy them.
That's good.
And I like that you want to make your Alaska roots known in your
yeah.
games, right? You've got one about hunting. You've got one about dog sledding. It's clear mm-hmm. your Alaska influence is there and you want other people to enjoy it as well. So it seems like featuring where you're from in your games is pretty important. Is that mm-hmm. right?
I mean, I would say so. I don't know. If George agrees, maybe he's anti-Alaska in games now.
Oh, no.
After all this time. A decade, I think.
There's a whole lot of cultural relevance that we want to tie into the games because yeah. it's a digital footprint. And that's the way that we see all of this. And that's how we saw and approached our last few projects is that we want to create an Alaskan digital footprint with our games. And if it's something that hundreds of years later, people, what is this strange USB device? And they're like seeing our gameplay of Soul King or our gameplay of Bisque. And they're like, why are these dogs pulling a sled? And maybe they go in and look up history of dog mushing yeah. in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that. That's the dream, is that just putting all of these fun games for us just eventually gets people hooked onto Alaskan culture.
Speaking on Arctic Comic Con, you're both going to be there running a booth. What
yep.
is the goal for you? What are you hoping to get done there? And you're doing like outreach and game demos, is that right?
Yeah, the booth is put on by the Alaska Developers Alliance, which is just a nonprofit that's aiming to further tech and development and games and software in Alaska. We're going to be there with Soul King, our first-person shooter we released in 2023, about outrunning a wall of death. We'll also have Alaska Stories, I believe, will be there, which will be super cool to have more people. It's got a really great response from people when they kind of come up and play it, as well as a reel of other games that are being made around the state. So we're collecting footage from like everybody we know that's making cool stuff around the state, and we're going to kind of put it up and be like, hey, here's this project, which is, you know, in development, or this project, which is available for release right now, basically as a way to help promote other developers who can't physically come and like show their game off at the event. We want to also like give them some of that. And then we might have another game, which is made by Michael White, who is my brother, in Bethel, Alaska, which is about knocking things off of shelves. You play a little cat and you knock things off of shelves, and that's like that's the game. Yeah.
So the cat game I would absolutely play, just to say that. You know, you don't should never underestimate the simplicity of a great game. I'm sure you know this.
Absolutely,
you know, Fruit Ninja, whatever. Yeah. What's the Jewel game?
Bejeweled.
Bejeweled.
Yeah. So, Temple Run. I mean, all these very simple games.
Exactly. Yeah. We don't you don't need to overthink it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I understand that you're working on a new project right now with Don Reardon, very well-known Alaska author. Is that right?
That is correct, yeah. We were originally hoping to work on The Raven's Gift, did a bunch of work to kind of set that up. It turns out that's not going to happen, but he was still super interested in working with us and kind of going forward with a new, completely original, completely unrelated project. So right now we are in the early stages of kind of prototyping, putting that together and figuring out what that will be.
We've just started getting into the early stages of development of talking, where is this taking place? What's happening? Yeah. Why is it happening? And what is the character going to be doing to kind of resolve what's happening in the game?
Yep.
And so all of the fun parts of making a game that people don't always know about.
That's all the part people want to do, right? Is like, oh, like what happens and what's the story and like what's the world and what are the enemies and stuff. It's before we get to the part of like, okay, now we actually have to build all that and make sure it all works and like make sure it's tolerant to issues and problems. And but unfortunately, that also means like we don't have a lot set in stone right now.
Can you talk about what the plot of the game is or anything like that? Or is it too early to say?
We can talk very vaguely about it, I think.
I'm okay with vague.
Yeah. So the basic premise is effectively a shipwreck off the coast of Alaska on a small, not previously known about island, which turns out has a lot of history to it and a lot of things that have happened in the past. And the survivors have to figure out how to survive on the island, how to not get killed by the strange creatures that may or may not inhabit that island, and eventually how to get off the island and get back home. Takes in a lot of influences. I mean, obviously from Don Reardon's work with The Raven's Gift, as well as stories from Alaska, like Ada Blackjack, and a lot of stories about Wrangel Island, which is actually off the coast of Russia. It's involved in that story. I guess
kind of just summarized, it's a little Alaskan sci-fi survival horror type game is what we're working on right now. Nothing totally set in stone, but we'll probably be giving out little dev posts as we continue development on it.
That's kind of your guys' bread and butter, right? Is this survival style game where you're in the wilderness and foraging and hunting and trying not to get killed by something, yeah?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, we did Three Step a couple of years back now. Like a while, well, I guess not that long. 2019, 2018? Feels like a long time. Feels like a decade.
Yeah.
Which was very much, that's also set in Western Alaska there, and is very much, it's hunting, it's survival out in the woods with kind of a story going on in the background there. And then, you know, like Provider is kind of a survival-y thing. I guess Soul King really deviates from that because it's running and shooting explosions and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think that's something just growing up in Western Alaska and remote Alaska, like survival is a thing you think about a lot because it's very cold and things try to kill you. Not they don't try to kill you, right. But like, you know.
We just like to make the games that we think people would like to play. So we make the games that we already kind of play, but just like to add our own little twist into there, have our own little artistic details put into there. And, of course, we just like to throw something Alaskan in there just to make it a little homey.
Even something like Soul King, which is takes place in this dreamscape, all of it is this sort of like astral projection reality. There's still stuff like, you know, it looks for melee weapons and like there's lots of just Yupik words thrown around in like kind of the background there. Not because it's like set in Alaska and it's all here, just because like it's games that are from an Alaskan perspective, not necessarily always set in Alaska, if that makes sense.
So if someone's hearing about these games about dog sledding, survival, how can they find your games online?
Yeah, we've got a Steam page. That's where a lot of people that play PC gaming go to get their games. And if you look up Chucknik Games on Steam, you'll find the assortment of the games that we have on there for the past few years of releases. And you can also go to our itch.io page, mm-hmm. itch.io/Chucknik Games.
Yep.
And Chucknik, so can we spell that for our listeners?
You can also go to cakeneck.com, CAKENEQ.com, and there are links there for all of the things we've worked on, whether that's on Google Play or Steam, itch.io, all the things we'll have coming up, which hopefully we'll have a lot more platforms to go on there.
We talked about what's not fun mm-hmm. about making games. You know, someone's job is to run into these walls all day, but what is the best thing about making them? What do you love about it?
I love hanging out with my buddy all the time. it's been really cool. One of the things that I really love about making games and putting them out there, and over the past few years of doing Arctic Comic Cons and other little game dev alliance
dev expos and
expos
stuff. Yeah.
It's been really eye-opening to see how many people and the age variance of people that are just so interested in gaming. One of the last dev expos that we did, we were showcasing the finalized version of our little Alaskan Stories demo, and it's a moment that really got to me because I get to see two little kids playing our game, reading the script together, taking turns, and it was just so cute and adorable. And I can kind of see the past vision of me and Wyatt just sitting there playing games together, and I can see my daughter in the future playing games. Mm-hmm. And so it's really making something that means something to the community. Once they see those little features, like people saw the Uloks in Soul King, and they're like, no way, is that? Yeah. And I'm just like, yeah. It's just fun little Alaskan things. It's really great because you get to see people doing that, having fun, playing the games. Even older people, people around our age. So
are we older now? That's how it works?
I think we are a little bit. got a kid and everything.
Yeah, I don't. I'm still young.
You've got dogs.
That's true.
You're a dog dad.
Well, what about you, Wyatt? What do you love about it?
I'm going to steal as part of George's answer in that I really do love like the demo events and like getting games directly in front of people. It's so different because like when you're making video games, we're self-publishing stuff. We're putting things out on the internet. We're putting things out where they're directly competing with like Call of Duty. We're not obviously competing with Call of Duty, but like technically we are in the same arena as Call of Duty and like Civilization and, you know, like Fortnite. Right. And in those spaces, it's easy to think like, oh, none of this matters and no one cares. And like, it's just nothing. It's a waste of time. But then when you actually go and like talk to somebody directly and like show them what you're working on, they get really into it. It's not like a consolation, like, oh, yeah, I mean, like, it's not very good, but they're here. So like, I'm going to be nice about it. It's more of people get really into it, especially with Soul King, with Alaska Stories, like you explained with the kids that were like reading together and like making decisions about what to do. And then, you know, all the conversations with people about, my kid wants to like, or, you know, my son or my daughter wants to make video games, or they want to like, know, they want to learn programming. Like, how do they do that? I've learned now to stop saying, yeah, just drop out of college. It's super cool. It's what I did. Like, I don't know. I did accidentally tell the first Comic-Con we did, I did accidentally tell like several people, the student would come up and be like, oh, like I want to learn to make video games. Like, how did you do it? What do you do? And I was like, I did bad in high school and I dropped out of college. And then I kind of look over and their parents, they're like, I'm not happy about this conversation. I've learned to stop doing that, which is good.
Right.
But yeah, I really love the demo events and like getting in front of people. And it's something that it's hard to explain to other people who are making video games. Cause I think there's often this like fear of like, you know, it's my baby. Like, I don't want to like go and like show it to people. It's not ready yet. Once you get somebody to do it for the first time, it generally clicks in their head like, oh, this is like super cool and great. And like, even if it's not ready yet, it's something that the person that I'm talking to probably hasn't seen before, probably hasn't experienced before, is one cool thing about making games. And for me, the other thing is just I like assembling the little clockwork pieces and like making all the little guys run around and hit each other and talk to each other and stuff. And then all the artistic stuff of like, themes and stories and making people feel emotions and whatever. Obviously, that's very cool too. But really, it's connecting with people and making the little guys punch each other, I think, is my top two. I
making guess to... little kniggets.
Yeah, making them punch. Yep.
Well, I want to thank my guests, Wyatt White and George Young. They're the creators behind CakeNet Games, and they'll be running a booth at Arctic Comic Con this weekend at the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage. Thank you both for coming in. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
After this short break, we'll be back with State of Art. I'm your host, Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art. Welcome to State of Art, your weekly dose of Anchorage arts and culture. I'm Ammon Swenson. Coming up, we'll hear from local hip-hop duo Brother Buffalo, brothers Jake and Garrett Swenson, no relation to me, wear their indigenous Eyak heritage on their sleeves and use their music to connect themselves and others to their culture and heritage. The guys released a new single last month called Three Sheets and have a coffee collaboration with Chugach Mountain Roasters and Black and White Raven Company that comes out on May 4th. They played the Anchorage Concert Association's Hip Hop Orchestra Experience and a Coot Show this past weekend. I spoke with them before those performances. Garrett speaks next.
For this Anchorage one, we are super excited because it's going to be a group of local musicians coordinated by Alaska Youth Orchestra. So that's including Alaska Youth and then also some alumni that used to be part of the Alaska Youth Orchestra, all coming together to create this orchestra. And then they invited us to come perform a couple songs with them and hop in with a cipher at the end. So,
yeah. And like the vibe is hip hop melded with classical, right? Like what is that kind of vibe that you guys could maybe kind of break that down for people, maybe if they can't envision it?
This is Jake, by the way. Honestly, I watched one of their last performances was in Mexico. I don't know exactly where, but it's like, In our hip hop shows, we kind of can like kill that middle space and we're kind of talking a little bit more. There, it's like really more of a kind of a beautiful production where there's like there's song, they're really long, like they're 6 to 7 minute runs. And then in between, it's like there's just that silence of like, I don't know, people taking it in, slowing down. Where for us, it's like normally we're like just trying to build and build and build.
But
it's like,
up.
Yeah, but yeah. It's more of like a journey, it seems like. And I think it's more of an experience, honestly.
Have you guys creatively done anything like this before?
Definitely not. I mean, we worked with a couple tracks that maybe sampled some classical music or something like that. Had like a little intro, but not like front to back, a true like Bach on Transcendence or anything like that. So we're excited. We're always looking to lean into something different or, you know, something we haven't done before. So
it'll be our first rehearsal on Friday with a full symphony.
Yeah. How does that make you guys feel? I'm assuming like rehearsal for you guys is usually a little bit more low key, less people on stage.
Normally at Garrett's house or something.
Just chilling the two of you.
So yeah, a little bit of a step up.
Yeah. Well, how did you guys get hooked up with the production, the orchestra?
Shout out to Mitchell Hansen over at the AK Concert Series. He reached out to us, and me and him have gone to school together since I couldn't even think of when, and I mean boarded up at Hilltop together.
Yeah, so we've always been
good buddies. When they were looking for somebody for another local rap group to reach out to, Mitchell tossed them our name, and I mean we've been working with our tribe on culture language revitalization, but also just cultural rediscovery and working with our tribe a lot over these last few years. So I feel like that also kind of gave us a leg up in that direction.
Yeah, totally. You're not just making hip hop. You guys are also kind of like there's some reasons, purpose behind it, like culturally and personally. Like you guys, mm-hmm. yeah, there's a lot going on with that.
Right. It's like the music kind of lets us get our foot in the door and then we can really kind of do so much more now.
Yeah.
It's really cool. It's kind of given us a platform to like explore that stuff.
You guys said you're going to be doing a few tracks with the orchestra and stuff. So you kind of talked about how, you know, obviously you've never really done anything major like this. And kind of talk about just a little bit maybe kind of how you had to rework some of your stuff for like an orchestra rather than a beat that you're in like total control of.
Yeah, it's really like kind of finding ways to make our stuff fit. And like when I first sat down with these beats and just like listened to all these songs and it was like, okay, we gotta think outside the box. These things are really long. And it's like the intros are long. And it's like, that's where it was like, I just wanted to like, okay, do we need to be like rapping right now? Do we need to be talking? But it's really like, no, we gotta like find it. We gotta like kind of let those things build, drop in here. Then we're not saying anything here. And then we're gonna bring in our hook again where we normally only do it two times. We're gonna do it four times here. My verse or his verse might go first this time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it might be half of it. And then we're going to do it at the end again. And it's like, I don't know. It's fun. It's like just putting a puzzle together.
Yeah. So I think that's cool because I think people that like are familiar with your tracks will probably be like, oh, wait, I recognize that one. Wait a minute. That was that other song. Uh-huh. Okay. Like, yeah, that'll be super cool.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. There's definitely a lot of area to play with, especially with all like the BPMs and everything that goes into these tracks. They're just, like Jake was saying, so long and like it's
even like time signatures and stuff, right? Is there kind of some weird like, are you like, oh my god, I gotta count to like six between these
kinda.
Like beats and
they,
stuff?
Honest, like, I will say they did a pretty good job of giving us like timestamps of when we're gonna be like plug in essentially.
Totally.
So that helped out a lot as far as how like much we had to write or what we had to kind of fit in there.
Yeah, the structure really kind of helped guide us a little bit there.
Totally. Yeah, but it's been a fun experience. Has definitely been outside the box.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, would you guys consider, I don't know, doing something similar in the future? Maybe not like a full orchestra, but be like, all right, let's get some classical musicians in a room, maybe just like a handful. And
we've
like
been talking. Yeah, we've been talking about doing getting some horns live on stage. Dude. And stuff like that too. Because mm-hmm. we've recently added a drummer, Derek Haukes from Frostline.
Sweet.
And then Booster Gold on guitar.
Nice.
And so we have like a five piece now for our last couple of shows. And it's like just moving in that direction.
Yeah. There's something about live music and hip hop combined that's always just so like a live drummer on stage when you guys are rapping.
Right.
So sick.
It's so cool.
Brings the energy to like a whole nother level.
And you can like shift the feeling a little bit and stuff too. Kind of like,
I find some of our songs feel differently now with the band. And it's like our energy is different where sometimes we're just holding. We can just like hold or like I can really scream stuff to where it's like before I was maybe just being a little bit more quiet or just kind of like trying to find the song where it's here. It's like, oh, this is just a different song now live.
Yeah. Just gotta feel it.
Way more energy on stage. I'm sure.
It's cool.
That's sick. All right. Well, so you guys also, like, in addition to the music and some of, like, the cultural work, let's talk about this coffee that you guys did. What's the situation with this coffee?
Shout out to Lyle Cass. He runs Chugach Mountain Roasters. It's in the same building Catalyst is in over off of Spinard. But he's been roasting coffee. He roasts coffee for a handful of different businesses and coffee shops in Anchorage. I've worked with him in Girdwood for a long time. And then we are friends with Chloe from Juno, who runs Black and White Raven Company. We were like, yo, we've kind of got this coffee idea. We've been playing with it for like a year, maybe trying different coffees, trying different blends. And it just like timing wasn't right. And then we mentioned it to Chloe and she's like, oh, I'd love to make some artwork for that. And shout out to her because she made a beautiful, I don't even know, kind of like a bio really for the coffee and for us. And it made me cry the first time I read it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a Brothers Coffee is what it's called. And it's sold at Chugach Mountain Roaster spot and then the Rookery in Juneau. It's just the first run. It's a little small batch. But it's crazy. I don't know. It's so crazy. We have a coffee. It's so wild.
I mean, so you guys were literally trying like blends and stuff like that to see what you guys liked the most.
He was giving us like dark blends that were more like tobacco-y and kind of had some like
smoky
stuff. Or and then this last batch he gave us is more like dank and kind of got like almost not fruity notes, but it's definitely taking a different turn from what we were kind of thinking we were going to take. And it's really yummy. It's really, it's a really really good coffee. That's awesome. Like a medium roast. It's really fire.
Yeah, no, super good.
Okay, well, also, like, you know, we talked about some of the work with the tribe and stuff, but, like, you know, you mentioned that you guys have been going to culture camp as kids, and now that you guys are older and kind of doing your own thing, you're coming back and, you know, kind of doing workshops and stuff with kids, yeah. I want to say. What's that like?
Yeah, we've had a lot of fun over these last probably 3 to 4 years at culture camp, being able to, like you said, host workshops, kind of impart some of our knowledge on the group in general, but also the youth that are coming up. So, yeah, this last year, actually 2 years ago, we hosted a new word workshop where we got to create new EAC words because, like I said, we're working on revitalizing our language. So a lot of what we have as far as documentation goes and just words in general are very, I don't think archaic is the right word, but they're very old. Like they don't have a lot of ideas or words built around like cell phones or TVs or things like that.
Yeah.
And we're in such a new age world today. We got to come together as a group, kind of brainstorm, you know, taking into consideration the fundamentals of EAC or the Hunyu, as we call it, the Hunyuga, but being able to create words that mean something to us today that apply to our current life. So that was really special to us. But every year we try and do some type of workshop. This last year we did a music workshop where we went through a handful of our EAC words that we have in our songs. But it's always a very spiritual kind of feeling at culture camp. It's really cool to come back to Cordova for like a long weekend. It's usually Friday to Sunday or maybe a little bit longer. And we have anywhere from, I'd say, 15 to 40 people come together across like 4 or 5 different families. We all get together for the weekend. We share food, stories, workshops. It's really special. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And like I said, we've been doing it since, I think, 2012 is when it first started. And we used to attend as kids, and now we're getting to help out and actually creating some of the
kind of get to shape it a little bit.
It's really cool.
Totally. I mean, like, speaking of like shaping it, I'm sure, like, do you find that the kids maybe connect with, oh, these are like some younger dudes who like rap and stuff, like, all right, like it may be a little bit easier into connecting to the culture, maybe?
I'd say a little bit. But I think we definitely still have some cousins that think we're probably just some boring old,
you know, old farts in their hip hop group.
I'm just starting to come around. But no, I think it's definitely a good way to reach the youth too. You know.
I mean, do you guys have good lines on kind of maybe like other, I don't know, I guess just like indigenous groups, like making cool modern music that you guys are into maybe?
We got one buddy down in Juneau, T-Loke. He's I'd say one of our better native buddies that's making some good music locally here in Anchorage. Balin, he's another native local cat.
Another cousin.
Yeah. Derek Hawkins, I mean, he's with the Casey Smith Project, but we've been
poaching him.
Yeah, we've been poaching him for some of our sets.
I mean, have you guys been finding more youth or kind of maybe using some like, yeah, disparate type of art to connect to their culture, like, I don't know, graffiti for like traditional stuff, or like, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, are you kind of seeing more of that popping up?
We did an elders and youth conference right before AFN this last year, and it was us and a couple of different native artists, actually.
Oh, Two Essentials.
Two Essentials, and
shout out my guy.
And
Wasabi.
Yeah. But we were there, and it was, I don't know how many youth were there, maybe 40 or 50 kids or something like that, and some elders and stuff like that. But we got to make songs and like make artwork in an hour with these kids.
So we left with something.
Yeah. And yeah, it was the, like, when we started, everybody's just kind of staring at each other, like looking around the table. Nobody really wanted to do anything. And so we just kind of got the ball rolling. And before you know it, it's like we were just passing this paper around, talking about different words in their native languages to like apply to this verse. Dude. And then we have kids over making the cover art, and one kid's like managing. He's like, all right, well, how much time we have left? Like, we got to do this. And then by the end of it, all these kids are like, we need to download this song. Can you airdrop it to us? Like, we want the song so bad. And it was like so fire to see like just youth super bubbly and like for going from kind of just nervous and nobody really wanting to show their true colors to like, I had kids just going in circles, just like rapping the verse. And like, we were just putting pieces together, and kids were like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'll read this. I'll do this. I'll do that. And it was like, it was so cool to see that. And I hope we made like a decent impact there, whether they want to rap or they want to do anything. It's just like, just knowing that that comfortability level is there. And it's like art forms in general and just like thinking freely and thinking in like a new generation and like a new world. Cause like, I don't know, our elders lived in a generation and they came from a place, and it's like, we're just, it's kind of the natural form of things where it's like, you got to keep tradition, but also like
be a reflection of what's in front of you.
Yeah, totally. So it was cool.
I mean, did you guys like have any influences like that on yourselves? Kind of like people that maybe are doing a similar thing that you're doing now, but I mean, maybe not specifically like hip hop or art music, or but just kind of that similar thing where it's like, man, I want to like take this part of who I am and like kind of use that to, you know, be creative or, you know, find a path or something like that.
Definitely. I say there is, I say always people inspiring us to lean more into that, the native side that we had. I feel like specifically with EEC, we didn't have a lot of resources growing up just because there wasn't a lot of documentation or everything wasn't really organized into a book. But shout out to the late professor Michael Krauss, because he took all of his like all of the documentation about the EEC compiled into one area. And then also shout out to Gary Holton, a linguist who helped kind of finish Michael Krauss's work before he passed away, put it all into this book, Grammar of EEC. And it's essentially everything that you could want to know, from speaking the language to just a little bit of the history and a prologue of each of the elders that he worked with too. So I'd say our elders were our biggest inspiration growing up, because I felt like whether I wanted it or not, we had a responsibility to kind of keep going with what they had started with the documentation with Michael Krauss. And I feel like we'd be doing it a disservice to not try to expand on that in some way, or at least, you know, learn what they had gone through.
Kind of push it along if you can.
I think another person, at least for me, that's really big is Jen Rose Smith, our cousin. We mentioned her earlier, but she like living, she had born and raised in Cordova, and like for her to step out, go to college and then go to Berkeley, get her doctorate in Indigenous studies. And, like, I don't know, it makes me a little emotional thinking about it.
Just, like, making it happen.
Yeah, she's, like, a native that, like, stepped out and, like, didn't... You don't necessarily always have to stay home to, like, get out there and, like, put stuff out there. So it's, like, for me, she's a superstar.
That was Jake and Garrett Swenson of local hip-hop duo Brother Buffalo. They were recently featured on the Hip Hop Orchestra Experience presented by the Anchorage Concert Association, and have a coffee collaboration with Chugach Mountain Roasters and Black and White Raven Company that comes out on May 4th. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson.
And that's all for our show. Thanks to our guests Mike LaJoy, Wyatt White, and George Young. Ammon Swenson produces this show. You can find us at the Hometown Alaska page on alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Dave Waldron, and thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.